This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 374 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. Joining me once again, hopefully with a fully charged battery from Melbourne, Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How much time have we got left?
I'm sorry, I have to leave. I've got a different computer tonight. And we're up to, according to this, 3 hours and 21 minutes.
Oh, you poor suckers listening.
Let's just leave blank air for like every 10 minutes. But in the 10 minutes of blank air for every minute of content. All right, no. We don't make the episode too good.
How's your week been?
Oh, yeah, pretty good, actually.
Yeah, good.
When I think about it, I've been busy organising stuff.
Yeah?
Been doing a lot of organising with our lovely people at Tamron.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I'm doing a series of talks for them in Melbourne and Adelaide.
Right.
Coming up over the next few weeks. So if you're Melbourne people, nice. Oh, yeah, it's always nice. If it's me speaking, it's very nice. No, so I'm doing on June the 8th, which is about 3 weeks from now, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm doing a talk for Ted's Camera Stores.
Right.
On an evening talk.
Yeah.
Should be lovely. And on June the 15th, I'm doing a lunchtime talk at Michael's Camera Store, which is about four doors up from Ted's. Right. So we're spreading them out.
Yeah.
So if you can't make they're more than likely to be different talks. Same general theme, but I haven't quite made my mind up yet.
Right.
And then on June 20th.
General theme being photography.
Well, being travel portraits.
Right. Okay.
Travel photography, photographing people as you travel, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cool.
And then on June the 28th, an afternoon in Adelaide for Diamonds Camera Store.
Right.
And possibly doing a photo walk after that with some people if they want to come and hang out. So
cool.
If, and I'd hate to say it, we're back down to seven listeners. If our seven listeners live in either of those states, there we go.
Excellent.
Or state of denial, one of the two. Yeah, so we've got no response from Scott this week. So,
no response.
So I'm thinking either, once was too many, and he hasn't even listened to the episode, or he listened to it, and he goes, nah, I'm staying away from this crazy mob. So I want to dedicate this episode.
Right.
To me. No. To Susan Menace.
Absolutely.
And why should we?
What, wasn't it Susan Menace that said that the other seven listeners were a little bit
complained on
miffed,
Facebook that she's there.
A little bit miffed?
So if you'd like to have an episode dedicated to you, send $100 and your name too. Yeah. So this is the Susan Menace episode.
Right.
I think once we've done all seven, we should maybe just stop the podcast.
Maybe.
Once everyone's had a little moment. But when we get to 400, how many episodes is that?
That's another 20, 26.
I reckon when we get to episode 400, we could do a poll.
Right.
And people have got – let's find out how many actual listeners we have. You've got to either go on Facebook or onto the website page and leave a comment – saying whether we should continue the podcast or not. And if we don't hear from at least 50 people, give it up. If we hear from 50, mind you, if we hear from 50 people say don't continue.
Then you will just consider that having been egged on and you will continue to do it.
We'll keep on going. Exactly. And that's going to be the challenge for episode 400.
Right.
We're going to do a poll.
Okay.
Let's see if people want us to keep on going, because that's a fair commitment into the 400s.
Well, it is for me.
Well, I've done like 18 or something, 20, 25 now or something.
Where were we up to when you joined? Was it about?
Oh, no idea.
180, I think.
No idea.
280? One or the other.
No.
I don't know.
Attention.
Anyway, cool.
So. So there, I'm serious. Episode 400 could be it.
Okay.
We might be calling time if we don't get some love coming back. Because we've got all our lovely couple of people who always put stuff through, and there's also Adam Davidson.
You wonder why we don't keep listeners.
Is it because you're negative?
Yeah. Yes. That would be it.
And I'm transparent. There we are between the two of us. Perfect. Yes. My week's been okay. So I've been pretty busy organising and times and stuff to do that stuff with Ted's, and also a bunch of camera stores too. Like not camera stores, camera clubs. I'm doing a bunch of talks over the next 6 weeks at camera clubs too. So if you belong to one of those clubs, because I can't remember who they are, come along. But I'm doing a Melbourne Camera Club in a couple of weeks. I'm doing Berwick. I'm doing Frankston. I'm doing a whole bunch around Victoria. So keep an eye out if you're a Victorian. Or if you're a member of a club in Victoria and you want me to come and speak, happy to. Mm-hmm. If you're a member of a club anywhere in Australia and want to spend the money to fly me in, I'll do that too. And if you're a member, let's say Venice Canberra Club. Yes.
Venice, Italy or Venice Beach, California? Yes.
No, Italy. Italy. me and Bruce will be happy to come over.
Absolutely.
We'll do a live podcast from
anywhere
Venice.
On the planet, if you're
pretty much,
there.
Yes. Anywhere but Geelong.
Right.
It's a little town just out of Victoria, out of Melbourne. Not that Geelong's a bad place, but the road down there, the world's most boring road.
Oh, really?
It's like a 50-minute drive, but it feels like 8 days.
Oh, dude, have you ever driven from Barstow to Las Vegas?
No.
Dude. Oh. Once was one time too many, I can tell you.
How long's the actual drive, though? How many?
From Barstow, probably only 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah, but that's a reasonable trip. This is under one hour.
But it's a straight road. Like once you leave Barstow, it's pretty much a straight road. And you see this straight line just disappearing all the way to a crest. And as you get closer and closer to the crest, you go, oh, I can't wait to see what's over the other side. And then you come over the crest, and it's just this straight road all the way to the next horizon.
So I'm assuming you've never driven across the Nullarbor.
I have driven across the Nullarbor.
Which is the world's longest straight road.
Well, 90 miles straight is the longest piece of straight road, I believe, in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm not sure if it's the world.
I thought it was the world.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could
if it
be
is.
Wrong. Just, yeah,
but
my
yes,
fat
that is
mind always.
That's a hell of a long straight road. Yeah. Anyway,
but that's I like that. That's a cool trip.
Oh, I love the trip across Australia. I really do.
And it's perfectly flat too, which for someone with a fear of heights like me. Love it.
So I'm taking you didn't stop and drive out and stop by the cliffs and look over the bite then?
No. Oh, I did actually. Okay. So I saw these whales. There was hundreds of pods of whales in for breeding season. So all the whales with their babies.
Wow.
So you can sit there and just look at these. And they're only, because you're up a cliff, so the cliff's probably 100 meters high, maybe, let's say. Oh,
and the rest.
200 meters.
Yeah.
So not that high. And there's all these whales down the bottom, which is pretty darn cool. So
yeah.
Okay. Highway 85 in Saudi Arabia, apparently.
Right.
693 miles straight.
Whoa.
1,116 kilometers.
That's insane.
It's a straight road that takes 9 hours and 15 minutes to drive.
Wow.
That's got the Nullarbor down pat, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Just kind of kicks his butt.
Yes, for those not Australian listeners, we have a piece of road in Western Australia. It's called 90 Mile Straight, and it is 90 miles or 146 kilometres without a twist. And, I'm pretty sure it still holds the record as the longest piece of straight road in the Southern Hemisphere. And obviously, the Saudis have pipped us in the Northern Hemisphere
by a
small margin.
It's like everything, like in Dubai, everything's going to be bigger and brighter and shinier and longer.
Yep.
God, unbelievable. But your little stretch from Barstow, not really mentioned.
Look, I'm sure there are the odd curves here and there, but it just feels like every crest you come over, it's just this long, dead straight. It's like that, the cover of the Eagles' greatest hits photo, shot in Death Valley with the highway that's just like dead straight all the way off to. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Anyway. It's but Geelong, it's a 50-minute drive.
that's where we started, Geelong.
50-minute drive, and it feels like days. Yeah, you want to stop? You have two naps, three meals,
right?
Yeah, you could possibly, it's a long trek. So I don't know. People do it every day. They commute every day up and down this road. I don't know how they do it.
Right.
Yeah, and stay awake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mind numbing. Anyway.
I saw through the week that Malcolm was having a little bit of a gripe about Adobe's pricing.
Malcolm having a gripe? No wonder we get along so well. So he's the negative one and I'm the positive.
That's it, yeah. I was just thinking there was a gag in there somewhere.
it's the opposites again, just like me and you, dude. So Adobe have in Australia, anyway, hitched up their monthly fee
again
for the second time in a year, based on currency fluctuations.
Yeah.
Now, there ain't been none.
No.
And, you know, it beggars me to say, you know what, just quote us the US price.
Yep.
And we'll wear the currency fluctuations as they happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's $9.99 US, and some months it might cost us $11.72, and some months $12.96.
Yep.
I don't care. I want a fixed price, not something that's changing all the time because of so-called currency fluctuations.
No.
You can't price based on currency fluctuations.
It is price gouging, plain and simple. Yeah.
So it's pretty easy.
And this was exactly why I wanted to get away from them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
So anyway, as I said to Malcolm on his Facebook thread, come and join us on the dark side. Linux and GIMP and Darktable, and you'll never have to fork out another cent that you don't want to.
But you don't have to do Linux either, though, really.
Well, no, you don't. You can run Darktable on a Mac. You can't run it on Windows unless you run a virtual environment of Linux.
You can run GIMP. You can do GIMP on Windows,
yes,
though.
Yes, you can.
So there are alternatives.
Yeah, for sure.
Do it.
And that Serif product that someone pointed us to a while back, that looked pretty amazing too as another alternative to Photoshop. So, yeah, all very interesting.
If it goes up another 3 cents, I'm out.
The one hesitation I have with GIMP right now, and I just don't understand why in 2017 this is still an issue.
Is it the name?
No, unable to open a TIFF that is in 16-bit format.
Ah.
Which strikes me as odd, you know, because quite often if you're working with a RAW file and you want to, you know, take that workflow through one or two other applications because of various tool sets that might be available in this piece of software that's not available in that piece of software, and it's not always appropriate or convenient or applicable to work with the RAW file, then your usual default stop is to export to a 16-bit TIFF, you know, because a 16-bit file gives you all of that tonal gradation that an 8-bit file doesn't give you. And so that becomes a good high bit depth intermediate file to work with in multiple pieces of software if that's how your workflow is structured. And then when you get to the end of your workflow, you re-import to, you know, Lightroom as a 16-bit TIFF file or a, you know, PSD file, whatever it might be, and then you can export your JPEGs and off you go. And so it just strikes me as odd that in 2017 that GIMP still can't handle a 16-bit TIFF file.
There must be some sort of underlying architectural problem.
It must be. Like, you can do 16-bit processing inside the program, you know, but it just can't open a 16-bit file, which seems really odd because
could you cut it in half?
Exactly.
Open up two 8-bits and put it back together again.
If only it worked like that.
And you merge them. Doesn't it work that way?
No, it does not work that way, mate.
So it's not like pieces of 8, but you just like break it in two pieces of 4.
Sadly, no.
Okay.
Anyway.
Wouldn't that just be like doing a panorama, though, a panorama stitch?
No. You really don't understand the technical side of bit depth, do you?
Oh, I might a little tiny bit. But it's much funnier to think of it that way.
Yes. It would be awesome if it was that simple. Anyway.
Oh, I just thought of something else I did this week.
Yeah?
I'm organising a Cradle Mountain Tasmania workshop weekend.
Right.
In late November with my good mate Cameron Blake, who's a phenomenal one of Tasmania's best landscape photographers.
Nice.
We're going to hook up with a couple of models up there, and we're going to do some landscape shooting, some astro shooting if the weather's fine, and some model shoots up in Cradle Mountain and in the forests around there. So, stay tuned. Anyone who's interested in coming along to that, we're just finalising the details, and we'll have it up on the market soon.
Cool.
So that'll be fun. That's something I haven't even been there.
Are you going to look at where the moon is at within its phase for the astro stuff, so that you time?
No.
No.
No, we're going to do the weekend that we're both available.
Right.
But I'm in India until like the 10th of February, then that next week, the 10th
February?
Of November.
I thought you said November.
It's a long trip. It's a long trip. Yeah, the 10th of November. I'm back. I get back, I'm only back a week before that. Right. And then a week after that, I'm somewhere else. I can't remember. So it's like there's not much opportunity to do it. And it's something we both want to do together. So, he's a good guy I've known many, many years, and he's a cool guy and a good photographer, so it should be a fun weekend.
Excellent.
And he'll look after he runs landscape photography workshops in Tasmania.
Right.
And so he'll run the landscape portion of stuff. Yeah, we'll get up early in the morning and do a landscape shoot, like a sunrise shoot, go back, have a nice cooked recce.
Nice.
Take the models out, do a shoot somewhere in the morning, in the mid-morning till lunchtime with the models, come back, have a nice cooked up lunch. Maybe have a bit of a nap.
Right.
Go out and do the models again in the afternoon. Come back, have an early dinner, and then go out and do an evening shoot, a landscape shoot.
Nice.
Or arriving Friday night, all day Saturday doing that. Yep. Sunday, do another sunrise shoot, do another morning shoot with models, lunch again, afternoon shoot with models, everyone goes home.
Lovely.
So it'll be a very fun weekend.
Yeah.
So 12 people only allowed to come. And here we go.
Awesome.
I've been busy this week. I've actually been working. struggled to get the naps in, I've got to tell you.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mind you, I must admit, Tuesday I did sleep somebody else picked the kids up for school. That was at 8 o'clock, and I woke up at 2:30 just in time to go pick them up from school.
Right.
So the nap might have extended beyond nap ability into maybe full. I think the technical term is sleep. It's only 6 hours or so. I had a really bad migraine, so I just got to black the world out and hid under the cover and went to sleep.
That's apparently not fun.
No, they're not fun. Not fun at all. Mm. But I get them occasionally.
Right.
Yes. And what's your week been? Have you been anything exciting?
No.
No.
Not in the slightest. I've got an acoustic session tomorrow morning, which will be fun.
Did you put a Model Mayhem post up?
No, I didn't.
You're late. Where's our social experiment gone? We're supposed to compare the difference.
I know. I'm just, I don't know.
Just lost the passion for it. Gone.
I put up a casting call and an availability notice, and I got one response.
The way you put the casting call out, you know?
Yeah.
Remember I said to you last week, whatever it was I said to you last week, you should have done.
Right.
But what's what I said? I can't remember.
You said
it was good.
Basically, put it up. I don't know. I'd have to go back and listen.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen to that. If some of the listeners can write and tell us what we said, that'd be awesome.
So what's this 3-year, 8-terabyte time lapse?
Yeah, some guy did a 3-year, 8-terabyte time lapse.
That's insane.
It's insane, the membrane. it's of flowers and stuff.
Hang on. I've gone to that link, and it's just petapixel.com page 2. It hasn't actually linked
really?
To that particular... Oh, sorry. No, I lie. It's a video.
You do.
It's a video.
It's a video. It's a time lapse. It's a time lapse. Time lapses are videos, you fool. If it was one photo, it wouldn't be much of a lapse. It'd be one photo of the out of the time lapse. But you take any of those shots out of the time lapse out of the video itself, it's just a still photo. That's how it works. You get, I don't know, 20 to 30 still photos.
Yeah.
And you put together, move them, movie. Movie. That's where it comes from. See,
moving stuff just is
moving boring. Movie. Moving movie. Right. Yeah, look, I mean, the quality's astounding.
Is it?
It's like, wow, that's cool stuff. But you know, I don't get it. I mean, I don't know why you do put that much effort in.
Right.
3 years is a bloody long time to work on one project.
Yeah.
Which I can't even... As I said in the closing credits of Monty Python's Life of Brian, the song "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life,"
yeah.
I said, "Daryl," I said, "they'll never get the money back. Oh, this guy, he's never going to get his time back. 3 years,
no.
Picture some flowers, nice as they are, pretty as it is.
Okay, so why did this take 3 years?
Maybe just trying to edit out the 8 terabytes. That'll take me a fair bit of time.
Yeah.
The shoot might have only taken 2 days."
Right.
You know, it's like sometimes you get a bit lazy. You can't be bothered going back and doing the edit of the photos.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like 2 years down the track, oh, I better finish that off.
Yeah.
So this wasn't really a 2-year project. Took a day to shoot and looked at it 2 years later.
Right. Yeah.
Could be. Anyway, that's my theory. Okay.
So I'm playing the video with the music, with the audio muted so that it's not impinging on the podcast. It is good, but... Yeah, really? Yeah. I don't know that I'd want to spend 3 years
doing
this.
Beautiful stuff.
Hey?
No.
I'm going to stop it because I think it's messing with our bandwidth. What do you reckon?
Is it good?
It was all right, but I think it was messing with our bandwidth. Lost you. So, yeah.
Kill bandwidth. Bandwidth's dead.
Yeah. I think it was because I was playing the video.
I think it's because you were playing the video.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
It might have affected the bandwidth.
Yeah. And your other story?
Did I have another one, did I?
You did.
How efficient of me. Oh, God, this is embarrassing. This photographer got employed by a guy to photograph when the guy proposes marriage. These engagement shoots.
Right.
Have you seen these things that get really popular these days?
Yeah.
The guy takes his girlfriend to some place and there's a photographer hiding somewhere and photographs. I'm not quite sure why you'd want to, what you'd ever do with the photos, but still. So this guy's employed to, he drives, it's on some big lookout in the mountains.
Yeah.
He drives for an hour. He walks for a couple of hours through the bush, back, gets himself up there. 6 o'clock is when it's supposed to happen. No one's there. About 6:17, couple finally walk out on the rock. Guy proposes to her. He takes his... taking the photos, you know, then they just sit down and kind of watch the sunset. He takes a few more shots, goes, oh, I'm done, gets off home, sends through a congratulations to the guy, and the guy comes back. I think he goes to sleep. He wakes up and goes, we didn't see you there. We looked around. You weren't there. I was wearing a blue plaid shirt. And the guy he shot wasn't. So at the allotted time he was supposed to be there, some other couple showed up, and this guy proposed. And they were running over an hour late, They couldn't call because there was just no cell phone, no mobile phone reception where he was. So he couldn't call or something to be like, so this guy's just photographed this engagement.
So basically I spent 6.5 hours, $40 in gas and food, 450 photos, and took the wrong couple's photos.
But the cool thing is then that using social media, he's put out all this stuff out there to try and find who the actual couple was he shot, and he found them.
Oh, nice.
He found them, and they loved the photos, and but the people who paid him, nothing.
Well, maybe you can get the couple that he did shoot to pay the couple who missed out.
But how's that? You bush bash all this way, you sit there. What's the irony on this remote spot? Somebody proposed at the same time you were going to, you know?
It's obviously a popular spot for doing that kind of thing.
Must be in the area, yeah. But I thought it was very funny. It's a photographer's nightmare, you know? It's just like,
oh, I can imagine.
You just always dream when you have to go on a shoot that you've been given directions to shoot, but you don't, you know, no one's actually, there's an art director there saying, you got to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a bit risky, you know?
Yeah.
I've been flown to places to do a shoot, and you've got this like little diagram of what they're going to want, and you open. So you're taking all these extra photos that might be kind of also it, just in case.
Yep.
So you've got backups, and it's always a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Had some gigs.
Anyway. Yeah.
So I came across a blog post through the week on Bored Panda about a couple who gets married after trekking for 3 weeks up Mount Everest and took a photographer with them, and they took her wedding dress and his tux with them. And
oh, man.
The first image is an absolute corker. It's the pair of them all dressed up to the nines, way up in the you know, upper reaches of the Himalayas with the snow-capped mountains in the background, and nary a soul to be seen.
So you can't see any of the dead bodies lying in, around the place either, which are up there. Right.
I was thinking as I was reading this, this is awesome if you didn't want to have to invite your family to your wedding.
No, look, you're all welcome. Yeah. We want you there. We want you there, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Mum, granny, we want you there, dear.
Yeah. No, don't use that wheelchair as an excuse not to be there.
Take your Zimmer frame, no problem at all.
So, yeah, that's something different. That is something different. So, and I love the close-up of their snowshoes. You've got
the boots.
It's like looking at combat boots, just, you know, poking out from beneath this beautiful white wedding dress.
That's awesome stuff. And the photography's nice too, which is good.
Yeah,
but all that, then the guy can't shoot, which is kind of
yes, that would suck.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
Now, Susan Menace, to whom this episode is dedicated, sent us an interesting one, this one. The blog post is titled, Six Reasons Why Bokeh is Overrated. But half of the headings are questions.
No.
Which is not what I expect of a list that is supposedly giving me six reasons why bokeh is overrated.
It's not, very definitive, you'd have to say.
That's right. So, item number one of the six reasons why bokeh is overrated is don't buy f1.4 lenses. How is that a reason?
Well, it's more a statement.
Yes,
you have to say.
Yes.
I mean, I'm assuming the text underneath goes on to explain why.
Maybe. Heading number two. Why pancake lenses are delicious for a photographer's breakfast? Again,
oh, absolutely.
How is very that a reason for anything?
It's not only a statement, it's not even a statement to the negative.
I know.
It's a statement to the positive. So I've had one for me and one for you so far, a negative one.
Heading number three, thinner is better.
Well,
how is that a reason?
in some things in life.
I'm sorry, going Susan. I'm struggling here.
Yeah.
Heading number four.
Just having a quick read through. Let me just read through because this could be where it's getting confusing. Okay.
Okay.
Thinner is better.
Which part are you reading?
Going to the whole thing. Going to the prior point, the reason why Leica is the most innovative company in photography is that they are the ultimate Zen minimalists. They are seeking to remove the superfluous. Every new iteration and generation isn't about adding new shit we don't need, but steady improvements via subtraction. Take, for example, the Leica 28mm 2.8. I don't know how they did it, but they've made it even thinner. And this lens hood looks badass.
Okay.
That's the whole statement.
But how is any of that a reason for why bokeh is overrated?
I've got a feeling the title of this article may be wrong.
I think you might be right.
I'm just saying. How to innovate. The six reasons, I'll give them that.
Either that or the entire thing is meant to be a parody. But I don't know.
Oh, here we go. So, stage six, how to take better photos. Sorry, friend, I got a bit distracted. It could be a parody. Essentially, if you want to make better photos, you do not need bokeh, nor do you need to shoot wide open. There you are. Rather, shoot any mode, or between F16 and F8. Look for foreground, mid and background. When you're making photos, photograph with more emotion and soul. Photograph more where people are making eye contact with you. Make photos that tug at your heartstrings. Make self-portraits which are personal to you. Well, of course, that is a photo of you. Can't get much more personal than that. Make photos of your loved ones because photography is just a meditation on life and death.
Okay.
And remember, ultimately, photography ain't about making photos. It's about making personal meaning in life. So what he's basically saying is there's more to photography than bokeh.
Right.
Bokeh don't make a good photo. It just makes bokeh.
It's six very interesting headings that don't really relate to the headline of the blog post.
Which I think is the point.
Right.
Its point basically is just to have more heart, not more blur.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, so...
Item four. What is the best 35mm M-mount lens? That's not a reason for why bokeh is overrated.
Yeah, but so the whole point is not... There's no reasons there. There's only reason comes in at number six, which is you don't need it. Forget about it. If it's there, it's okay, but it doesn't mean the photo's not going to be any good.
Right.
Just because you've got a blurry background, don't make it a good photograph. Sorry. I can have a blurry foreground, blurry mid-ground as well. All I got is a blurry photo. So I can see what he's doing.
Okay.
And I see Susan's at. I mean, after all, it is her episode, dude, and you're being mean to her like that's not very nice. Quite
sorry.
Frankly.
Sorry, my negativity is showing.
Again with the negativity. It's all you've got, isn't it? Yeah. Sarcasm and negativity. It's all you have. Grow up, mate. Grow up. Next.
So we've got a couple from Adam.
Davidson?
Yeah. What other Adam would it be? This one is called the free skin softening software you've probably never heard of.
I knew of it.
You have?
I've even used it.
You have? Right.
I mean, Adam's been using this piece of software for a while. It's right there, standing out in front of you. It says skin softener. It's on one of the filters you can use in the software. I don't know how he missed it.
Well, that's essentially what the blog post says, that, you know, this dynamic skin softener, which is part of the filters included in Nik Color FX Pro 4.
It's a fluff piece.
Yeah.
Because if you go to Nik Color FX 4, I'm just going to open it up now, and it's on this computer, it's extremely fine font.
Right.
You've got, it goes duplex. Dynamic skin softener, film effects faded. Right. It's right there on the list. It's not hidden.
So not
it's not in the submenu.
Bit hard to miss.
Well, not. It's alphabetical order, which I can see where Adam maybe struggled. But other than that, it's right there.
Right.
If you just look down the list, it's right there.
Okay.
And if you have color effects, which Adam does,
yeah.
And if you use color effects,
doesn't everybody? Which Adam does. Didn't Google give it away free. For free?
Exactly. You should, because it's free, yeah. So I'd be using it. It's one of my favourite pieces of software. But, yeah, look, yeah, and you know, it does a pretty poor job, I've got to say, though. Maybe I've just haven't learned how to refine.
Or Color FX Pro?
Color FX Pro is great.
Right.
But maybe I just haven't learned to be patient with it and use it properly, but I find it a little bit over the top. A little OTT, Bruce.
Right.
But once again, for anyone who hasn't got the Nik software of programs that are free from Google, go and get them because they're awesome.
Absolutely. I'll dig out the link for anyone who hasn't got them. Google made it all free about 12 months ago, and it seems like they're not going to develop the Nik line of software any further.
Not at all, because the people who worked at Nik, they've moved into other departments in Google.
Right.
The whole reason they bought Nik was to get access to these guys.
Right.
And then take them away from what they wanted to do. And work in other areas. So, right. So that's why I don't know how many hundreds of millions they spent on Nik. Yeah. It was effective just to get these guys to come and work for them.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I can't see it ever being updated.
So, yeah, definitely worth grabbing if you haven't already done so. And the other story that Adam sent us is Fujifilm X Series will make you a better photographer.
Oh, thank goodness something's going to. I've got to get some then.
Now, I had a bit of a skim through this, and essentially the short point to this whole blog post is that the real...
That bokeh doesn't make good photos?
...real-time view on the EVF is going to make you a better photographer than just seeing an optical view through a mirror box.
Codswallop.
That's essentially the argument.
I mean, its first line is, of course, we all know that's not strictly true.
Yes.
Why would having an electronic viewfinder make it better?
Oh, because according to the blog post, you can see the results before you push the shutter.
On a tiny little screen that's hard to see, with hardly any defined detail.
Well, hang on. How's that any different to chimping on a DSLR? It's the same size screen.
Now, when you look back at the screen, yeah. Which about the optical viewfinder, the optical viewfinder okay. Versus the viewfinder. So if you're looking through the viewfinder and can see it on a screenshot inside the view, those viewfinders, even the best ones, still don't remotely compare to an optical viewfinder as far as detail you can see.
No.
Not with QE. The only area I can see an advantage to an electronic viewfinder.
What's that?
Is when if you're doing sport and you're doing continuous shooting, there's no mirror blackout.
Yep.
So you can be able to follow and keep tracking your subject.
Yep.
And that's a big plus.
Keep them in the center of the frame if that's your
goal. You can track them. You can follow them however you want to follow them, but you can still see them.
Yeah.
That makes a big plus. But there's no other reason.
No.
I've looked through every single. So people can say, oh, but you haven't seen such and such camera. I've seen every electronic viewfinder camera in existence. And I've found one that compares to my optical viewfinder on a 100% viewfinder on a Canon or a Nikon.
Right.
This is chalk and cheese. It's just, you look through it, it's like, oh, for an optical viewfinder. Look through and you go, oh, what is that? With the electronic one.
Yeah.
That's just not good enough.
Okay.
Then they won't make you a better. It's going to make you a better photographer because you're going to use their inbuilt film simulators. There you go. No. A real benefit for the X series when considering the film simulations is the in-camera RAW conversion, because you're going to do that on a wedding. He's showing wedding photos in a wedding. What's shooting the wedding? You're going to say, oh, you know, I'll tell you what, I won't shoot the bride hugging dad. I'll just convert a few of these RAW files whilst I wait for all the hugging and kissing to be done. Yeah. There's so much downtime on a wedding. It's crazy. I may as well edit all these RAW photos if I'm getting ready in the morning.
That's right.
Oh, we don't need to. The ceremony, I've been to hundreds of these. I'm not going to do that. I'll sit outside the car with a cappuccino, edit some of the roars of her walking towards the chapel. That'll do it. They won't mind not having the kisses and the hugs.
Now, Steve Peter sent us an interesting one. Yeah. This is a follow-up to the story that I brought in last week about the Lens Culture and Magnum Photos photo competition with the rather provocative image that was used to promote that competition. This is a story about that photographer and the long-term project that he had been working on. His name is Suvid Datta. And essentially, the story goes that she was underage in India. She was 16. And yes, she was working as a sex worker, but she was being raped. And he knew that. And she knew that. She knew it was going to happen. And she allegedly asked him to document it. Now, no one can say whether or not that conversation ever really took place or didn't. But there's been quite a lot of scandal about this, apparently, because there are people who feel, hey, you're an adult, photographer notwithstanding, you had a duty of care to look after a minor, regardless of the situation, whether she thought it was okay or not. Yeah, so this whole...
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a big can of worms.
It is.
But anyway, this is a whole blog post about the whole backstory to that image. So for anyone that is interested in having a read, I've only had a chance to skim through it, Steve, but thank you for sending it through. So yeah, apparently there's been quite a lot of negative blowback on him ever since this story erupted. Various organizations who've been affiliated with him in various ways have retracted their support of him, and yeah, I think he's probably wishing the whole thing would just go away and, you know.
Be careful what celebrity you ask for.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, that link will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out.
You know, okay, just before we move on.
Yeah.
Okay, so if he hadn't taken the photo.
Yep. How would the situation be different?
No. How many of all these news agencies and blog posts and web articles would be written on child sex prostitution in this country?
A lot fewer.
Almost none.
Yeah.
So the fact that he took the photo has got everyone talking and bringing it out in the open.
Yep.
And now the Human Rights Commission are talking about this and that and blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, you know, yeah. Should he have taken the photo? Should he have not taken? Who knows? But the fact that he did has opened up all this discourse, which may change the future.
Yeah. Good point.
If the photo hadn't been taken, whether it was right or wrong to have taken it, almost doesn't matter. The fact that it's done, you can't undo
what's been done. Past, no.
So it's been done. How does that change the future?
Yep.
And does it change the future that, oh, he gets slammed and blasted and blah, 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 and he goes and kills himself because he can't handle the pressure or whatever? Or does the Human Rights Commission start an awareness campaign? And do they then go into this area where they might not have been working before and put more resources? You know, does a positive outcome from this one incident that, Even if she wasn't complicit in having him take the photos, there's many different ways to look at it. But I think that is and I said all along,
I mean,
this $10,000 prize for this photo competition should now be given to the Human Rights, or equal amount that should be matched by somebody to say, okay, we want you to spend that $10,000 in this area where that girl was working.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue if, you know, out of all of this, you know, furor and discussion that follows the furor, if even the life or working conditions of one child is improved because of it,
then they'd say, well, that one child should have been that child.
You can't always pick.
Yeah, no, but it's to say, if it's only going to affect one child, it should have been that child that was affected.
Yeah.
If it's going to affect lots of children, then the photos could be maybe worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it's only one child, it should have been that child.
Yeah.
That's my view. Yeah. If it's not going to have impact anywhere and do anything and help anything, then you step in and solve the problem. But if this is an ongoing, massive thing that's happening to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of girls a night in the same area, and that one photo can maybe have impact somewhere else around the world for awareness, you're fixing a drop in the ocean if you stop one.
Yeah.
But if you don't stop it, you might be able to stop the whole ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. You know, the furor could have enough impact. Yeah. It's possible.
Definitely.
Yeah. Anyway,
we got a couple of stories.
Interesting discussion.
Absolutely. We got a couple of stories.
Almost serious for a while, eh?
Yes. Well, we had to get there eventually. A couple of stories from Carl. Just to take it away from the seriousness just for a moment again. People are photoshopping Mr. Bean into things, and it's absolutely hilarious.
Their Photoshop skills, or?
I think just the images they've chosen to Photoshop Mr. Bean's face into. And of course, as my internet would choose to do it right now, it's loaded the entire page but without the images. I can see all the tags, number one, number two, number three, but none of the images at all. I did get to have a look at these the other day, and they were funny, Carl, so thank you. The link will be in the show notes for anyone who wants to have a little chuckle. And the second story from Carl was, the photographer finally snaps the perfect shot of a diving kingfisher after 6 years and 720,000 photographs. I have a vague recollection.
We did this about a couple of months ago.
A couple of years ago, actually.
No, it was a few months ago. Maybe 6 months, but we definitely covered it.
But I remember the shot. It's a corker of an image.
But he went, he said 100 days a year photography for 6 years. It's trying to get this one photo. Yeah, it's a cool photo.
Yeah.
Very cool photo.
Definitely.
Yeah. I imagine he's got lots of really, really good other ones.
Yes.
As he has, because there are lots of, you know, there was one there where the water's perfectly still and the beak's just touching the water and it's perfectly reflected. I mean, that's really cool stuff.
Well, that was the one shot he was after.
Was it?
That's the one he was after. So he finally got there. So that's it. That's all of our stories.
How do you know he's going to go into that one little spot?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, because you see all these shots of like, yeah, and this is a practice that goes on a bit with nature photographers. They catch a fish and they inject foam into it and then throw it back out in the water so it floats on the surface.
Ah, right.
And then they're just sort of tee in on the fish, waiting for the eagle to swoop down and take it because flopping around on the surface. So, I mean, how would you know out of all this area that the birds, and if he's using a pretty big lens, so he's got a very narrow angle of view.
Yep.
What's making him go into that one little spot?
You know? Because it certainly doesn't look like he was tracking the bird.
No. I couldn't imagine it'd be possible to track.
Yeah. The only thing I can assume is that he's cropped the image. That he's, you know, maybe had a wider angle of view, had a rough idea of where the bird was going to hit the water and has managed.
Because these things are tiny too. I mean, we're talking a few inches across or whatever.
And the other side of it too is what aperture do you shoot at and how do you get on the right plane of focus? Like,
exactly.
A bird coming in at that speed, you haven't got much time to manually focus and your AF isn't going to help you.
That'll be why he was there for 6 years. Lots of work.
Bird was probably dead. You know, he's had someone drop it in the water.
Drop it again, Dave. missed it. 2 inches to the right. Oh, dear. That's just our jealousy.
If he wasn't nailed to the bird.
That's just our jealousy for lack of skill.
Yeah, that's right.
Our lack of skill just makes us jealous.
That's it.
And your negativity between the two of it. Bang.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, we're done for another week.
We have done.
We've got a big episode next week.
We do.
We don't often get to say that.
No. So that'll be interesting.
It is.
Dare I hint to you what he's going to talk about?
Yeah, go on.
He's going to bring into question the validity of photographic workshops.
Ah, excellent.
I thought you might enjoy that.
We're going to have fun on that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to dedicate a whole episode next week.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Will do.
Weekend.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Susan.
See you, mate. All right. So that just leaves us with David Marlin's book review. This time, Night Photography. This should be good. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. When you think about it, night photography is the same as day photography. But because there's less light, exposures are longer, so you get an opportunity to be a bit more creative in different ways to day photography. I mean, one way to deal with it is to simply rack up the ISO, put up with the grain, and stoically carry on, or you can explore the possibilities. Night Photography, From Snapshots to Great Shots by Gabriel Biedermann and Tim Cooper, is a very good primer on night photography and the possibilities it presents. The book covers a wide range of topics beginning from gear, exposure and composition, then developing through to a whole series of those possibilities: light painting, writing with light, the night portrait, night skies, cityscapes, star trails and fireworks. The last section of the book deals with post-processing. The style is easygoing right throughout, and I like the feature photos, which have call-out boxes to different aspects of the image and illustrate different points being made by the text. The feature photos begin each chapter, and they're also scattered through the text. But the photos are not always what you might expect. For example, the opening chapter on gear opens with two photos. The first photo is a colour abstract of bridge lighting, and the second is a deliberately blurred photo of a lighthouse, probably taken with a lens baby. Both of these photos are intriguing enticements to make you read further, think further, and give the book a lift and getting it away from being a pedestrian thing to something that's of interest. But really, the book is a beginning. Here are some basics about all kinds of night photography. Read them and go forth, experiment and have fun. So, Night Photography, From Snapshots to Great Shots by Gabriel Biederman with Tim Cooper, is published by Pearson. Now, Book O has it listed from about $23.50 to just under $60, and as an ebook from $21 to $34.50. The original publisher comes through Peach Pit, and they have it for $23.99 US and $19.19 US as an ebook. Now, as I said, it's a good primer into all kinds of night photography. But if you're actually looking for something specializing in, say, starscapes, but not too technical, I can tell you about another book, but you'll have to wait to the next review. Cheers.
Fantastic. All right. That will do it for this week. Glyn and I are recording a Skype interview on Monday, and that will appear in next week's episode, and I'm really looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. All right. Until we speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.